Well, it happened. I was asked to join a Rings of Power conversation with some Lord of the Rings geeks, and I said yes. October 11th at 8 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining three other podcast hosts to talk about Rings of Power Season 2. Now, they all actually talk about Lord of the Rings all the time, and I don't. I'm considered the outsider of the group. I'm not nervous about it at all. I'm totally nervous about it, especially because I haven't even watched it yet. But don't tell them that. I can still watch it. There's still time. This live event will, again, start at 8 p.m. Eastern, and you have to register for the event, and part of the proceeds will be supporting charity. So that's pretty cool. You can register for the live event right now at ringspodcast.com/live. A link is in the description of the podcast today, and also you can find it on Discord in the Captain's Pod channel. I'll pin it to the top. So join Captain's Pod, me, John from Lorehounds, Marilyn from Rings and Rituals, and Aaron from Lore of the Rings, October 11th from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern at ringspodcast.com/live to talk about Rings of Power Season 2. Okay, bye. We have to stop the show.
Me too. We're just going to stop and do a Princess Bride review instead. Oh, shit. Captain's Pod, Stardate 1691-34.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thanks for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from... Did I step in something? What the... I like to do a walk and talk, so I usually do my captain's log while I'm walking, and I think I stepped on maybe a tribble.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you know that I breed them now.
You breed tribbles.
Yeah.
Okay. Joining us as we take a brief short leave from the world of Simpsons to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your captain, Ian Whittington, and with me, as always, she now breeds tribbles and spontaneously turns into a cube.
Yes.
It's Ambassador Danae.
Yes.
One of these things I knew, the other I did not.
You don't know I breed tribbles?
No. That's abnormal. And news.
That's insane. How do you not know this? You give me a creature that all I have to do is feed it and it's happy. Like, I am so excited. Because I have a struggle with keeping plants alive, you know?
Yeah.
So if I can, like, not only keep something alive, but, like, help it to thrive, that's exciting.
But with the minimal effort possible, is what you're saying. Like, you don't have to do much for a tribble to thrive.
That's
it just
exactly right. Yeah.
Is.
And it's a great, kind of perfect. It's a great business. I mean, I have so much inventory.
You can't sell them, though.
You can't tell me what to do.
Do you ask them if they want it to be sold?
They don't have a choice.
Yeah. Okay, while I report the ambassador to whatever the Federation version of the Animal Rights Association is. What is that? What's the American version? We have the RSPCA in England, the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals.
Oh.
Is there a US version?
I don't know.
Yeah, you wouldn't, would you? You tribble-selling fiend. Ignorance of the law does not absolve you from it. Anyway, this week we will be doing Season 1, Episode 8 of Lower Decks, Veritas. Do you know what Veritas means?
Of course I do.
Good.
It's what happens when you're just done with varicose veins and you chuck them out the door. Veritas!
I said that with such confidence. I don't know what it means either.
I assumed it was a planet.
Oh, it means truth or reality.
In which language?
I'm guessing one of the Latin ones. It's Latin. Yes, it's Latin.
I was hoping it was like Klingon or something.
No, it sounds Romulan, though. Like, there would be more apostrophes in it, and there would be more like phlegm if it was Klingon. Romulan is very Latin. Klingon is more Welsh or probably Nordic.
Yeah. If it was a tribble, it'd be like, wow.
Oh, I can't do that. Anyway, any predictions for this week, Ambassador, before we dive in?
Do you want me to try to access, like, the part of my mind that sees things?
Yeah, the visual, the imagination, which I learned recently some people don't have.
Boimler is going to be holding a horny trumpet-like item.
You're looking at the thumbnail.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're... Yeah. Yeah, I did that.
You nearly blew my mind. Nearly, you know, I was like, because it's happened before, and I'm like, this is great. This is great content, because she's just imagined. Oh, no. No, she's looking at the same thumbnail I am.
No, yeah, that's the thumbnail.
We'll see you in 10-4 for a full debrief. We're heading over to the holodeck, 2 to beam out. Mm-hmm. Welcome to Turn Forward, the part of the show where we grab a drink from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. Most important question first, what is your something of choice from the replicator?
I want eel juice.
Eel juice? Well, I want a, I want a horn that you can only speak the truth into.
It didn't say that you could only speak the truth. I think it implied that. But
it's my favorite, like, we're just getting immediately right into it. It's my favorite throwaway thing where he's just like, this is the horn of truth. You must only speak truth into it. But and Rutherford saying, happy to be here.
I love that
immediately
part.
Immediately just answers the question. Is this magical? Like, is it bullshit? It's so clever. Anyway, give us a synopsis, Ambassador.
Oh, shit. Okay. do you want to see a salt monster? Q, references to Picard, an adventure from multiple people's perspective while also mm-hmm. inside of a potential life-ending trap birthday party. Boy, is this the episode for you. Do you want to know more about how Robotford's uploading works? This is not the episode that will explain that, but it will it will further make you question his character at this point. And also Tendi. Is she a badass or is she accidentally a badass? We're not supposed to know, but we know now because this is, we watched them out of order, but if you're just watching the season as you're supposed to, then you don't know.
I think by this point, you know.
You don't know.
Have we not seen her kick any butt up until this point?
This is the first time.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was kind of the point was like,
yeah, that's she's interesting.
Kind of wink, wink.
I just take it for granted now.
And also, the eels from Princess Bride show up, so that was weird.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what?
What?
The eels from Princess Bride?
Yeah.
I need to watch The Princess Bride. That's what I've learned.
Have you never?
I have never watched The Prince. I use it in outtakes pretty much every week on CinemaSins, and I have not watched The Princess Bride. Oh, no.
We have to stop the show.
Me too. We're just going to stop and do a Princess Bride review instead. Oh, shit.
Like, rarely am I the one that feels this feeling. Usually people aim this feeling at me because I'm the one that hasn't seen something that everybody has said, like everyone has seen.
Yeah, I'm getting some shit in the chat.
But the fact that you have not seen Princess Bride is...
Like, I know it.
You don't.
I basically do. It's like...
Okay, what's an R-O-U-S?
R-O-U-S. It's a rapidly ovulating, undulating sphincter.
I don't know how you guessed that.
Am I close?
How did you guess that?
Am I anywhere close?
Yeah, that's basically the entire thing.
No, it's not.
Wow. It's not. I'm shocked. I really didn't think you'd get the ovulating part, honestly, because it's like such a weird word to put into like a love
movie. It's not weird. Movie. It's perfectly normal.
No, just I mean, normal, it is, but...
normal process today. Everyone ovulates sometimes. Get back into the episode. Did you like this? What are your thoughts about this rampant episode of Star Trek?
Yeah. I really enjoyed this episode.
Yay!
Yeah.
I did not know which way this was going to go because, like, this is rapid. This is rapid fire reference adventure attack, attack, attack. That can be a lot.
It is really, really fast paced, but I think what it does pretty well is it has clearly like one unified story that it's telling because they're all together. So you have the A team and the B team all together. And then we do flashbacks into these strange things. Now the flashbacks are absolutely chaotic and often barely make sense to this quote unquote trial that's happening. And it's, you get the feeling it's supposed to be a mystery that you're piecing together what's going on. Mm-hmm. And what I don't like about this episode and why it dips for me is I don't like how it ends. So while I do like the episode, I think where it lands is maybe the biggest miss for me yet because I don't think it needed the birthday switch. And if it was because we basically saw a whole bunch of really strange, mysterious things happening that have their own story and their own things that it brings up and new questions we can ask about each character and what they're doing. And yes, the season and the show itself wants to introduce like mysteries to solve, like who is Tendi? Why can she kick ass? What's going on with Rutherford and his implant? Like those are new things that we can kind of carry throughout the rest of the show. But for this episode itself and the missions that they were on or maybe they weren't on, I was looking for that tie-in for the fun reveal as to
what they were doing and why the neutral zone is important and how they did. Like, those were really interesting bits for me, but that wasn't the point of this episode, and it's not the point of the show either. Like, their adventures are not designed to make me feel a sense of conclusion. It's all just chaos and randomness and references. And sometimes I'm okay with that, and sometimes it bothers me. And in this case, I've had a lot of time going, "Ooh, this is fun. What is going on? Blah, 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 blah." And all the side references, is, you know, all the stuff is going, it's just so fast paced, of course. Mm-hmm. I can kind of look past that, especially when I'm like, yes, this story is going to be okay. It's it's a birthday party and none of this matters. And that's it.
It all matters. So. It all matters today. Birthday parties matter. I'm actually with you. I really love this episode. Like, when I saw Veritas pop up on the "What are we doing next week?" I was like, oh yes, I love this episode. And it's 95% of the way there. And I don't like the birthday party thing either. I get it. I'm not the joke isn't lost on me. Like, the courtroom is a callback to the Undiscovered Country, and I think they do it in Enterprise as well. This towering Klingon courtroom where the judge is way, way up high. He has the gavel, whatever it is, that he smashes down and it sparks, and Kirk and McCoy are on trial. It's setting you all up for that. So it's not as clever a reveal as I think it could have been, because it's hard, because I get it. Like, it's playing on our expectations that this is a trial and everything has been set up to be insidious. But I'm like, there are so many ways to have avoided this situation, and none of them happened, and it's kind of weird. Like, this is where, like, I get pushed beyond parody and beyond kind of being able to keep bought into it, which is something we've struggled with this entire season, especially when they're asking the questions at the end. Mariner's like, why didn't you just say something?
Yeah.
Like, if you can tie all of that together, make me think that this is a trial and then turn it on its head, and I still believe that the new thing that it is makes 100% sense, then I'm all in, and like, it's landed really well for me. Having said that, I did have a great time along the way, and I love how all of the memories do tie together into this narrative of rescuing the alien that's been kidnapped by the Romulans.
I think the humor beats of this episode win me over in the end. Like, the minor frustration I feel for this not being a mystery to solve.
Yeah.
I think this would be a really great first episode to consider.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's too much.
I don't know, because it follows... you don't really... It introduces Lower Decks, the concept of Lower Decks, where they stand in the ranks. It shows the A team, it shows the B team. It's a really funny moment. Like, there's so many funny moments where they were like, the whole thing kicks off and Rutherford has redone their speaker, and they don't even know that there's a red alert going on. Like, that's so funny.
That taps into a genuine fear that I would be sitting as a Lower Decker. I would be sitting in anxiety so often, worried that I was missing a red alert. I would always be peeking out just going, is there a red alert? I don't want to miss it. I don't want to miss it because it's important.
Also, the conversation between Boimler and Mariner when they're in the lift going to the bridge, like, God, of all of the days we had bridge duty, today is the day. And then they sneak on, they're crawling into the background, and then he just fumbles through that experience. That was so funny to watch.
It's so great. Evasive maneuver. 88. Wow, that was the wrong answer. 84. Wow, in this situation? Are you trying to get us killed? I think you're convincing me. Because even like it being set around a trial would be very familiar as well. Like, I think if you were less familiar with what Lower Decks is, you might actually give this ending more of a pass. Because it does sum up exactly what Lower Decks is here to do. It's to set up the tropes and then kind of turn them on the head a bit.
Yeah, and it's so very clearly making fun of itself in a way where it's very obvious. Like, when we get to the part where Boimler is defending everyone at the end, and he takes the horn and he's calling it all out, and he's explaining that not even the senior officers know what's going on some of the times because he reads their logs, which was pretty funny. And then we get to see another series of flashbacks. This is a reason why the show is a lot, but there's another series of flashbacks of the senior staff fucking up. And it's funny because you see, for example, the Ransom Handsome dating a salt monster. So there's a reference for a Star Trek fan who's been around for a long time. But the references are, they're new and fresh, but they're also like, they're deep. There's Picardness. Yeah. Q is in this one. So kind of no matter where you've come in to enjoy Star Trek, I mean, there's even a Beverly fucking the candle reference in this one.
Rosa reference. It's so great. And then he just ends with Drumhead, which is just the episode title of a TNG episode. And that's about a court case as well. And that's how he ends his rant. It's like, Drumhead.
I didn't know what that meant, but there's enough in there that I caught something else. And so even though it's rapid fire, there's a lot here that I think somebody could jump in and enjoy. And it definitely gives you the vibe of the show. And at this point in the series, you know, this first season, this is really when a show should be really comfortable with the content that they're putting out to an audience. Mm. In this case, when it first came out, the first time it's ever been seen, like they are firing on all cylinders on this episode. There is something for everybody, and it's not even a shotgun blast. This is just full phaser fire nonstop. This isn't even just like the pew, 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 and then like takes a break. Mm-hmm. This is like a constant beam, fire hose to the face kind of an episode, but it's exactly what this show is all about, and it shows that full spectrum. Mm-hmm. So I would show somebody this one pretty confidently, but I can see why.
Yeah, I think you've convinced me. And this season of Lower Decks, I think, man, it suffers because of how much Lower Decks we've watched after it. But if you'd watched this in isolation and watched it when it first came out, for me, this is the most confident first season of any Star Trek show that I think has ever been out there. Like, it knows exactly what it is. It isn't trying to find its feet. It's like everything is kind of... everything is in its place, and I think they knew what they were aiming to do with every single character and exactly what the mission statement for Lower Decks was going to be. And it's such a strong first season.
It's definitely fun. The last couple of weeks, it sort of faltered for me a little bit, almost like I felt like it was trying too hard. And I could easily see that same vibe for this one, but for some reason I enjoyed this one a little bit better. And I think it was because, like I said, everybody's together in one unified story instead of having to keep things separate. So the flashbacks is the show's way of breaking us off of what's happening on screen. And, you know, there is something about storytelling that I really miss. We've talked about this many times, so I won't spend a lot of time on it. But when I watch TNG, or really any older show at all, the pacing is such a break. It's such a nice kind of breath of fresh air in a way, because it'll sit in a moment. And in that moment, if you're like me, not everybody is like me, but you kind of fill that quiet with your own sort of impression of what's happening in that universe. The camera will linger on someone's facial expression, and obviously the actor is emoting like the director hopefully wanted them to. But it's not a telegraphed thing. And so you get to sort of fill in that. And when you read a book, it's kind of the same. You have an opportunity to imagine and bring something to life in your own way, if you're an imaginative person like I am. But a show like this doesn't really give you that time. And I find myself missing that in content, not just here in Lower Decks, but this is maybe the more extreme, extreme storytelling that I have ever watched. It's like Adventure Time or something.
Yes.
Or like Rick and Morty. Kipo and the Age of the Wonder Beasts. Yeah, a little Rick and Morty. But even Rick and Morty, I feel like the pacing isn't quite like this one. And I would be interested to know if anyone can remember watching this and thinking it was really too much, but then it sort of like slows down a bit in its storytelling, because right now it's sort of like when a salesperson gets you into a conversation and they just start telling you about everything.
Star Trek, now, let's go.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I think it does slow down a bit. Season two and season three, I think, still have their moments. But I think when you go in knowing what to expect a bit more, you kind of get used to it. And I think it does slow down. But like the end of this season in particular is rapid. It is.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah. And I can't imagine the pressure of writing for a major franchise like this.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the stakes are so high, because there's so many invested fans.
Well, and jumping the show into a new genre as well. Like, not just animation, but irreverent humor. This is literally going where Star Trek hasn't gone before.
And then it's also such a shift in storytelling pacing as well. It's not just the animation or the cursing, and there's lots of cursing in this one and lots of censoring, mm-hmm. but for other reasons. And it's fun and it's kooky and has that, like you said, Rick and Morty vibe to it at certain in certain ways, like we saw with the dog last week and then mm-hmm. with Q and some of the game stuff. But dog, it was so in itself. Like, even the Q mm-hmm. stuff I thought was super clever. So there was just, I don't know, I really appreciated the references on this one. I think more than usual. Like, when Q shows up in this particular story as a part of a flashback, like, they're taken to a game board, but there's multiple games going on at the same yes. time. And
which one is it?
Yeah. And so it's the show's way of making, you know, not fun of itself, but having fun with the yeah. fact that figuring out what Q's game is a trope of Q. And yeah. here they're just going to like make it really obvious. Like, what game are we playing? Asks the captain while dressed as a chess piece opposed on a checkered board, but opposite her are playing cards and a soccer ball drops that then turns into a different game altogether. So it just sort of mm-hmm. keeps turning in on itself in these really clever ways. And then yeah. just to make sure we got our Q time, of course, Q is there at the end. Actually, it does appear and Mariner gives him shit, which I liked that too.
Oh man, that sudden turn, I loved it so much. Like, no more random shit today. We're done with your shenanigans, Q. Go away, get out of here. So, such a great turn. And just like, this is what you kind of want Picard to sometimes say to Q. He's like, I'm not doing it. I'm not next week. We'll do what we've had enough today. Because it's kind of, I took it as like this commentary also on like the 1 week nature of the episodes as well, how adventures will kind of space themselves out. Like, you won't have Q suddenly turn up in the middle of an encounter with the Romulans. Like, he won't just pop in and say, ha ha, because it's a TV show and you're not going to grab John Delancey in to do that and disappear. It doesn't make sense narratively. But Q has just turned up at the end of this adventure and I was like, no, we're done for this week. Like,
yeah.
our 24 minutes is up. Try it again next yeah. time.
And even the self-reference of the rental silo where this birthday party was taking place, saying like you only booked it for 22 minutes is such a perfect. Clever way of
yeah.
being like, yeah, we know we have to rip everything up in 22 minutes or less. Mm-hmm. But the humor for me was genuinely funny. And we get to be introduced, as mentioned, to a couple of character components that I think would hook somebody in a little bit more. Maybe at this point you're watching it and you're not really connecting to any sort of mystery to the characters mm-hmm. or motivation. Maybe you're not interested in the will they, won't they of Rutherford Tendy that could be on camera or drawn. Maybe you're not into the back and forth of Mariner and Boimler and those characters. But now we have a mystery of Rutherford and we have a little mystery mm-hmm. with Tendy as far as their personal stories. And I wonder if that, I think I would assume that this is the perfect time to do it. If not now, if maybe you should have done even earlier that mm-hmm. there's got to be a reason to come back besides just the crack pace of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, the interesting thing, I think the only argument I'd have against showing this to somebody as a first episode is the lack of Mariner. Because it's so, like, up until this point, it's really been her show. And it's interesting that Boimler gets the big speech at the end. Like, if you were starting here, you would think that Boimler was the main character. Like, it's interesting how Mariner ends up taking a back seat. And even, like, says a couple of things that are against character for me, where, like, Tendy is excited about cleaning the observation room. And then Mariner's like, I never get to clean the observation room. And is that, like, is that just a throwaway joke? Or is that tapping into, like, how she actually likes the same cool stuff that Boimler, Rutherford, and Tendy get excited by, but throws up this wall of coolness that's like, no, I can't like that nerdy stuff because it's too nerdy.
I know that this story is an arc, but I'm going back through all of the episodes I've seen, not just in the season, obviously, but the ones that I've actually seen up to this point. And I think there could be an argument to be made that this is a show that, yes, is maybe more of the pie about Mariner, but it is also Boimler. I think they're really yeah. sharing this attention of those kind of two characters, and rightfully so, because the fans of Star Trek may connect more to a Boimler, you know, and mm-hmm. having such a rebellious character like Mariner is uncomfortable. So I think we need to have some security to ground into to make us feel like this isn't just making fun of ourselves, but it's actually got some deeper tone, a deeper tone to it. It's still a good episode, in my opinion, to start with, because you're never going to, mm-hmm. you have to trust that that person watching, that you know them well, give them an episode that you think that they're going to enjoy. If this is it, then great. And then if they want to watch it again, they can kind of get to know the characters as far as who is sort of
yeah
on the top.
That makes sense. Before we get into like the some more specifics of the episode, you said that the references worked better for you this week than in previous episodes. That might just be a general feeling, but is there like a specific reason you can pin down as to why you think they worked better, or was it just a general, I just enjoyed it this time?
Well, I mean, there's the simplest version, which is it's a easy one, is that a lot of the ones today were visually on screen when referenced. Mm-hmm. Q is there, you're talking about Q, you can see Q. Salt Monster, you see Salt Monster. Gorn, you see Gorn. So it's not these very cerebral callbacks, which this series is sort of known for. They'll mm-hmm. make these references that a super fan will catch. I miss a lot of those, and they just yeah. become kind of like,
but that word sounded referencey because I didn't understand what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like engineering talk. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. That, whatever. So I think that was part of it, is that not only was I in on the joke, but even if I wasn't in on the joke, I saw it. And then that's like something that I can get.
That's really interesting. Yeah. It's not just a throwaway, like Khan versus Rogadanar. You're not going to know who Rogadanar is.
No, I have no idea who that is, but that was really funny to me.
But, oh, so that one worked. Even though you didn't know who, that's great.
But here's why, because I didn't know it was a reference until right now. Like,
right.
That is a nonsense
okay, gotcha.
Word to me that doesn't yeah. mean anything. And what I liked is that Mariner was like, get the fuck out with that. You know, like that was
a Rogadanar. Like, she was saying how obscure that reference was when everybody knows who Khan is. That's a, yeah, that's kind of meta, isn't it?
But to me, like, I don't care if that one's a meta reference that somebody gets. The setup mm-hmm. for that was that they are having conversations about who their favorite is, and yeah. the other favorite's a name that I do recognize. And so I can, by context, sort of deduce that. But there's other there's so much other stuff in here that I don't need to get, but I was mm-hmm. in on it enough this time that I felt like, oh, this is fun because I understood that reference, instead of feeling like, oh, I'm missing, you know, 20% of the show.
That's
because
really
it's
interesting. Yeah. So it can you can connect to it a lot more because it's visually on screen and it's stuff that you know as well. That makes yeah. a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because then I guess if Q's on screen, to anybody that doesn't know, anyone who's watching this and doesn't know who Q is, it's easier to like explain that character when they're actually on screen, instead of like a runaway, wow, that letter of the alphabet was mentioned and then never mentioned again in the episode.
Yeah. The other thing that was fun about this one is that it has a lot of, like, there's the Romulan Warbird or the, sorry, no, wait, is it the Romulan Warbird?
Yeah, it was a Romulan Warbird, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
An old that's the one that disappears, Kirk's era. Right?
Cloaks? The one that cloaks?
The cloaks.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Well, the Klingons do as well, Klingons and Romulans.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, both of them. It's only the Federation that isn't allowed to do it.
Okay, interesting. So we even have cloaking in this episode, so there's a huge bonus fun reference mm-hmm. and they get to make fun of it, like walking into parts of it, you know. That's
that cracked me up. It's so funny. It's like stupid bird of prey.
But it's really funny. So and whatever else references I didn't get, there was enough in there that I was yeah. having, you know, a good time with it. So great question, but I think that's why.
Well, let's get through the episode a little bit more. I one of my favorite bits, and it's so I don't even know the logistics of how this works, but it's Tendi's flashback and the fact that so much of it is redacted. How do you do that when you're telling a story? And I love that they just have the black bars across the eyes. The bleeping goes wrong at different points. Like, a giggle was never, like, far away in that scene. It's just, it's nonstop. It's so funny for me.
That part worked for me. That flashback was filled with fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think because it wasn't cutting in and out of multiple things. Like with Rutherford, it was every time he blacks out and comes in, we're in a new spot. And so
we're in a new Star Trek location, which I kind of love.
Yes, but it was very rapid fire.
Disorienting. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas with Tendi, you're kind of on one linear, you're just with that particular part of mm-hmm. her story. But where it got me was when she was trying to say, I don't think I'm the right person that should be here. I need to kind of fess up that I'm not the cleaner that you think I am or whatever.
Yeah, wrong type of cleaner.
And that person was like, oh, we're being scanned. And it just kept interrupting. And there are some times that those repetitive jokes work mm-hmm. and sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it worked for me. It hit fast. It went slow. It rapid fired. And then more just kind of kept showing up. And it was just insane. And I loved birds it.
By the end of it.
Yes.
All surrounding this one ship that they apparently can't detect. Yes. Oh, they're scanning again.
It was really funny. But again,
it's just, I think that's really funny as well. I love that. We mentioned it earlier, but I love just Boimler fucking it up when he's coming up with the different maneuvers, because this is something that's always like been in my head. Like when Picard and Riker or anybody are like mid battle, they'll look down at their chair and be like, evasive sequence Delta. And somehow like they know that specific evasive sequence out of I don't know how many they have is perfect for this situation. And just, when I was younger, I was like, I couldn't do this job because I can't remember all of the maneuvers.
Remember all of my letters.
I don't remember all the letters right now. I don't know what's going to happen in this situation. And there's 360 degrees of space. Like, there's so many different possible maneuvers that you could be doing. So Boimler was very much me and a lot of us in that moment of, which maneuver do I... And the fact that they're giving him shit, just like, oh, you picked that one? Like, and then he pulls out a Crazy Ivan, which is a maneuver from Firefly, which is amazing. That's great.
Oh, I totally missed that.
Not even the right TV show. It's incredible.
That's so silly.
So great. I love it. It just cracked me up. And then, of course, you go on to Mariner. And the captain just, like, send them a message. And, like, send them a message is such, like... the connotation is always fire, because like the message being sent is aggressive, and she does it and everyone's like, whoa, what are you doing? Why are you firing phasers? That's not what I meant by send them a message. And it's that movie talk that kind of gets misinterpreted.
Yeah.
Entire thing just cranked me up. It's ridiculous.
Miscommunication is a theme through this one, because so much could have been avoided if they had just said out loud, I want you to beam us out when we give you the, instead of kicking everyone's ass. So just tell Tendi what you wanted and she would have done what you wanted and we could have avoided that. But then of course, then we don't have a crazy show.
Mm-hmm. What were some other moments that hit you before I start running down some of the references and Easter eggs that I love that you may not have noticed?
When he was singing about rotating the capacitors.
Oh, it's cute. So funny. He's so happy.
Like when he says, just happy to be here. Like this character is so interesting. And then in this episode.
Okie dokie.
So for me, Rutherford becomes more interesting in this episode. I have a lot of questions about how his mechanical piece is working and why he can shut him off, but he's still active. But then we've all probably had that friend that gets drunk and still is able to function. So I'm just assuming he's inebriated or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Scary. Super scary.
Yeah.
I think this show just goes like story to story with very few, like very little thorough, like we're not going to start next episode going, so Rutherford, about the fact that you can black out and do all of these things. Like I think it's
suddenly have abilities that you didn't have before. Yeah.
I think the show is just going to reveal whatever the mystery is kind of slowly. And I remember mm-hmm. little bits and pieces of it, but this would
I think it's season three before we really get into that.
This would be a really wacky one to.
Yeah.
I have so many questions at this point about Rutherford, but I love his character because he has this like this genuine adoration of the mundane things of engineering.
He really does.
And I really love meeting people when they have found that thing that brings them this much joy. And I know that it's sort of rare to have it on this degree and it's amplified for storytelling, but
mm-hmm.
to start off his story and explain, like, well, we have to twist them because they get a little too hot. Oh, that's cute. Okay, that makes sense. And he's just like, he's just singing his little song, you know. And then every time he's caught, like, he's the one that's at the driver's, he's the one driving his brain, and we're back into his story instead of being blacked out. Mm-hmm. He's just so adorable and really genuine in his attempt.
Yeah, he's the most genuine, like, the Rutherford that you're seeing is Rutherford. Like, he doesn't really have the ability to project anything other than what he is. Like, even when they're asking him, like, do you have the information to do this Romulan thing? And they're just like, well, he's like, no, I can download it. Okay, fine, I'll download it. Wait. Like, Boimler would have made up some bullshit about, yeah, I already know this. Mariner would have, like, acted out. Tendi would have been shy. Rutherford's just like, yeah, I guess I can do that, but I didn't really want to update right now. He's the most genuine person on that ship.
Super, super great. And I think my curiosity about his story is the reason I would watch the next episode. I think I care most about whether or not he survives the world. So
I think you're just going to have to watch season 3 privately again, because I think you'll appreciate Rutherford's story even more.
Yeah.
There are some great little nods and just inclusions here. So Kurtwood Smith is the actor that's voicing, what's his name? Kral, whoever, the person that's putting them on trial. Mm. And he has appeared in a two-parter in Voyager. He was the Federation president in Star Trek VI, which is where this trial room is pulled from. So he's just like one of these Star Trek people that has popped up. So it's fun to bring him in to voice a character like this. Kenneth Mitchell is also voices a few different aliens. And he is a huge Star Trek fan, and he appeared in Discovery, and he recently passed away after a battle with ALS. So it's fun to see him appear in this as well. It's such a show for the fans, and to include so many, like, different voices that, I mean, I didn't recognize it was Kurtwood Smith. I had to go and Google it, but it's just so fun to have these bits of Star Trek history pop up as well. Not to mention the Bird of Prey popping up, which is the first time we've seen that old school Bird of Prey since the original series as well.
I remember seeing it because it had the painting of a bird on the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the first time I realized that something was painted on the ship, I think I was talking with my Aunt Brittany, because the first warbird that I think of is the green ones.
From TNG? Like the big noses?
Yeah, they're huge green ones we've talked about.
Huge, huge, huge ships. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I didn't realize that there was, like, one before that.
Yes. Yeah. Little tiny little thing. We see it pop up in Picard, because 7 of 9 is being chased by one, and then they laser it in half. The one that pops up the most is the D Derridex, the one that I have on my shelf over.
Off screen. Oh, there it is. Look at that.
Wait, no. There it is, next to my ear. There we go. It's great for the podcast, right there.
So I do have a question before we go on.
Yes.
If I heard correctly, before Rutherford passes out the first time when he downloads his information, they say, have you had your shots? Because there's a Romulan flesh-eating bacteria and you don't want it on your peen.
Denobulan, but yes.
Did they say peen? Was that real?
They or
was
said pee, but then it, like, gets... He's like, whoa. So they're about to say penis, but then get cut off.
I think he said peen. Like, I don't think he was cut off.
I think
he did.
I think the is got cut off.
If I was going to rewatch this episode, is it wrong that it would be just for that moment?
It's so funny, like, because that's usually implied, but he definitely gets an N in there. There's definitely a peen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to reach a peen.
I wrote down, did they just say peen? And then they go on to say something about bacteria, like, in the pants, like it's eating through your underwear or something.
Yeah, I've seen it eat through your pants. Yeah, and then he blanks out. It's amazing.
I think they say peen, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I think they do, but I think the intent was penis. But
I'm going to need somebody that has a desire to look up the subtitles to update us, send an email to captainspod@cinemasins.com, please, so that we can...
Please do that. One of the more interesting references for me was Boimler saying, did Picard know about the Borg? Which is really interesting, because Voyager fucks around a little bit, because Seven of Nine's parents were on their own self-funded mission to investigate rumors of the Borg. And that is some years before Picard and the Enterprise first meet the Borg. So, okay, Seven of Nine's parents clearly get assimilated, but that means that, like, nothing of them survived. Like, nothing... Like, the Federation knew they were off to investigate something, but no mention of their research, anything they did, made it back. So it's just, like, kind of this question that's hanging over the community of how alien were the Borg? How much... Did we know anything about the Borg at all? Wouldn't Picard have known? And obviously the answer is that episode of Voyager happened later. So... The Borg were invented for that episode, and then we retcon some stuff.
So this episode says that he doesn't know.
Well, Boimler is just like, the suggestion is that actually Picard fucked up and did know about the Borg, because he's listing all of the things that Starfleet officers get wrong. But it's more just like hanging this question, the question that the Star Trek community has, and just putting it out there, and just like, did Picard know about the Borg? Does it even matter?
Because interesting. Took that the other way, where he said there's a whole bunch of things the senior officers don't know Picard about the Borg. So but maybe it's just ambiguous enough that it's just.
And I think that's it. It doesn't matter whether Picard did know or didn't. Starfleet is made up of fallible creatures. And that leads into one of the things I really like about this episode, which is listing the mission statement again, which is everyone fucks up. Like, even if we weren't on a California class, they fuck up on the Enterprise as well. We just don't see it on the TV show, is kind of what Boimler is saying and not saying. And Lower Decks is all about kind of seeing the fuck ups as much as anything else. So it just kind of like reset what the show is trying to present to us as well.
Well, I will say that in the outtake section, we're going to read the comments from the chat about what they think about the Borg.
Interesting. I love that. Love, love, love that. Love that. Tell me how wrong I am. I love it. And also we get a Gorn wedding as well. This is the first time the Gorn return and is in the form of a wedding.
That
and
was amazing.
Gorns!
Did we both just say that was amazing at the same time?
Yeah, that's one that we say ruined. A lot.
Okay.
Yeah, warbled.
Yeah, we warbled it. I loved that. I also loved that he tried to activate his own passing out, knowing that it had been working for him so far. And then he just comes back into the same moment and is just being nommed on.
It's so funny.
What I don't like about it is that it kind of, even though it's a joke, if you were to be attacked by that many Gorn, I would think that you would be dead. And knowing what we know about how the Gorn are being portrayed in Strange New Worlds, how the Gorn were portrayed even in the Kirk fight and how serious it was, you know, to take them and then suddenly make them where they just kind of lay down and just like use you like a chew toy.
Well,
takes the wind out of the sails. And I get it. They looked goofy in the first time because it's a big alligator costume or something. But Strange New Worlds does not have that same approach. And yeah, maybe they didn't come out in the same sequence. I get that. But still, you're telling me that now in the world of Star Trek, I have to believe that in one show, maybe this is a sin I didn't realize until now, in one show, they're the most terrifying creatures ever. And much of what we do in Strange New Worlds is all around the Gorn coming back and this whole thing. But then you're going to show me that Rutherford was surrounded by a whole bunch of them at a wedding and walked away alive. I don't know.
I'm completely with you. And it jumps out because, Strange New Worlds did come out after this season of Lower Decks. So they wouldn't have known that the Gorn were going to be changed and made more menacing. And this is at a time when we're at peace with the Gorn, but then why is the nomming happening if we're at peace with the Gorn now?
Okay.
Well, we're not actively at war with them.
Like, so we're not at war, but we're more in the neutral area of our relationship.
Neutral. Yeah, we're neutral with the Gorn. Yeah.
So maybe in this case, they don't kill, they just chew.
Yeah, it's just more of a like nibbling. Like if you interrupted a Klingon wedding, you would leave that with a black eye, I would imagine. Like, there's going to be some consequences to being dumped in.
Or minus a peen.
Minus a peen, exactly. With that, how many pips would you give it, Ambassador?
3 pips, I think.
Yeah, I'll give it 3 pips. I like this one. It's rapid pace. I love that everything kind of gets tied together. I love the Boimlers in the background, and it's just like, wait, why were they getting the Romulan bird of prey Why were they getting the map? I love that he's kind of tying all of the pieces together. The landing is fine. It's just not to my taste. Like, the landing works. It's just, I don't like it. With that, let's head over to engineering to do some of our fun little sins. Red alarm.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
Red alarm. Red alarm.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Ambassador, you first.
Why are we still using lint rollers?
Can you think of a better... You know how efficient lint rollers are? They're incredible.
I guess it depends on what kind of lint roller you're getting. If you're getting one that has, like, it's reusable, I guess it's mm-hmm. okay. But they're not that great.
No. I mean, they are for your clothes.
But it's... If we're still using sticky tape to remove hair in the future,
mm-hmm.
I'm just really upset about that. We have sonic showers. Surely there's, like, a little thing that could just... Detect hair, remove hair.
We have light sticks that can seal wounds back together. You'd think there would be a wand with a light on it that would get rid of the cat hair. Yeah.
That's right.
Or maybe there's an inoculation that stops her from shedding at all.
I mean, maybe shedding is good.
Yeah, maybe she needs to.
I like sweating. That's why I don't take it, like the antiperspirant. Mm-hmm. I like to wear something that takes off the odor but allows me to sweat. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's the cat's preference. Yeah. And I realize that maybe calling the doctor the cat is rude, but just for...
She's a Cation. You can call her a Cation.
Just for clarity.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. My sin there would be that in Up the Long Ladder, an episode of TNG, it said the ship cleans itself.
Yeah.
So
why
do we even need to do that? Why isn't the bloody ship cleaning itself?
Yeah.
There we go. Maybe it's just that the Cerritos isn't, because it's not as advanced as the Enterprise D. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
I would like to sin that Rutherford has perfect memory, and wow, how much that should come in handy when it doesn't. Rarely mentioned that Rutherford has a perfect recall of everything, and they do not utilize that shit more.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to give specifics. I can just guarantee there are so many situations where that would come in handy, and it doesn't.
Yeah. I think you realize sometimes that you've written something a little OP and then you just have to kind of pretend like it didn't happen.
Data, for example. he should be leading every single away mission in every aspect.
Yeah.
There we go.
Another one of my sins is that they say the comms are going to be going silent and then they used the comms, which is something I get really bothered by because I think he did like the little in-ear thing and said, he says something, and I can't remember what Handsome says, but he says something referencing going quiet. And that really bothers me in movies and shows. I want to see what it's like whenever you go quiet.
Yeah.
Be quiet.
How does this script play out when there are no words?
That's right.
I'm going to say that you should not be able to miss a red alarm. Yes, Rutherford messes with the speakers. There's certain things that should bypass any messing around that you've done. It should just, like, my lovely new board here, I can mess around with the dials and the levels as much as I like, but the raw recording ignores that and is like, nope, no. This is more important. Stop fucking with it. And the red alert should be untamperable.
And yet it's not.
And yet Rutherford tampered.
For reasons. There's got to be a sin, and maybe it's just part of their culture of this alien species, but the silo is used for events. And in this case, this guy booked this event silo to have a party to celebrate his return. And he's invited Starfleet / taken them to have this like eel tank. We have the beam of celebration happening. There's a whole bunch. Mm-hmm. This event silo has all the bells and whistles of every party that you'd ever want to go to.
Yeah.
They have a beam of celebration. And maybe I can believe all of that, but do I believe that a guy who just came with a cake to celebrate his daughter's 100th birthday would pretend to be part of somebody else's celebration for 22 minutes?
Why is he banging
minutes?
A ball that looks like a gavel from Star Trek 6?
There's
6.
Something there that I would sin. I mean... Maybe if I'm really old, I have nothing else to do, and someone was just like, hey, will you just play this part at my birthday party before your event starts? I would say, you know, I have nothing else to do. Everyone I know is dead. So yeah, I'm just the oldest person and
this is fine.
I have nothing else to do. I've already taken my medication for today. I'm going to go poop precisely 4:45. That's still 2 hours from now. So, like, you know, I don't know what retirement's like, obviously, but this guy just becomes a judge, and I just can't stop thinking about that. And I can't tell if it's funny or sinful, honestly.
Well, I would love it to have a function, because I think this episode is so close to landing that if all of the elements... And like, if all of the elements had a function that made sense in both a trial and a birthday celebration, and like you can moan and say, oh, just switch your brain off and have fun with it. It's just silliness. But it can like really, really sing when the gavel and the person behind it means something, the darkness means something, the eels mean something, instead of just saying, why were the eels here? You ruined this. Why are the eels here? You ruined this. Like, non-explanations don't get a pass in my brain. It's like, it can sing and it can get to that next level when it's like, oh, I misinterpreted everything, and everything has an explanation and a reason. Like, the intensity of why he's accusing them of these things and why he's offering up a punishment, and never once mentioning the inscription wall and why they're there. Like, you would go about this so differently.
Yes.
And if you're not, tell me why you're going about it differently.
I understand that the show is implying that he's waiting his turn, but he showed up 20 some minutes before the party and joined someone else's celebration, and then just sat there and was like, I think I'm going to hit the gavel right now. You know, without any conversation to the party giver, you know, like,
yeah,
he's like, I don't even know him. And it's, well, then how did he know to hit the gavel at that time? And why is he pretending? Why are, you know,
just
anyway.
Tell me why. Just give me a reason. Yeah. Like, you can call it classified, fine, but that's not an explanation. Give me an explanation. Makes it better. Not just because I can't have fun, it's because I want to know. And there could be a reason. Biggest sin of the episode. I'm annoyed. Also, don't throw phasers at people. Especially phaser rifles. Chucking phaser rifles all over the place. Quit it, Ransom.
Is that your next sin? Is phaser
rifle? Yeah, it's my next sin. You're the worst first officer. Stop throwing rifles at people.
Mine is torturing eels for no reason.
It's fair. Boiling them. Just boiling eels.
I mean, it's a delicacy in some places.
In London, it is.
Is it?
Jellied eels. Yeah, that's a thing.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, jellied eels. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Okay.
It's yummy. It's like just a seafood mix, but with... in a gelatin thing, yeah.
Like in a Jello classic. Mold? Like you put them in a festive Jello mold?
No,
and it's just got like a circled eel, like sort of like in that little poo swirl, you know? And
it's not in a mold. It's in a cup, and it's jellied. So it's not like a solid thing. It's like, it's all mixed up.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I have had an eel, but I've had a barbecue type eel. And it's only like a tiny little inch long section on my sushi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And that it's similar feels to that, but very more different rustic. Than jellied eel for some reason.
Yeah. No, it's we keep more of like the fishiness around it. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. What were we talking about?
I don't know.
there is the rapid fire sinning that Boimler Mariner does at the end, and my biggest one was, why was the Cerritos on a mission to Romulus? And I was like, yeah, you can have your characters ask that question, but I want to know why was the second contact ship on this covert special ops mission to Romulus of all places? Like, why wasn't it the Enterprise? I want to know.
Tell me all of the things.
Tell me why. I want to know.
Tell me why. I think that's all of them for me.
I've got a few more. Why aren't the Romulans shooting at Tendi? They all just run at her and let her beat them up instead of shooting them with their Romulan disruptors.
One at a time cliche.
Yeah, one at a time cliche. How does Mariner know that's a salt vampire?
Mariner ever know anything that she...
But I mean, specifically in that instance, like, how she did she it. Know that was a salt vampire? And why is it allowed? Why is it allowed on the ship?
She saw it.
But why is it allowed on the ship? Why isn't that raising
Maybe
more
it's
issues?
Peace times, just like the Gorn.
Also, why is the salt vampire coming up as a new person? Their MO in the original series episode, The Man Trap, was to appear as somebody from their past that they knew. And that's how you suck them in.
They've evolved for survival.
They've evolved to get worse at the thing that they're doing. That's a great tactic. Why would you appear as a stranger? You then have to be seduced.
No. It's evolution, because the salt monster has discovered bar society.
To just be a pretty person at the bar And then you don't have to get specific. That's you just right. get picked up. Yeah, no,
just
that's fair.
Just get pretty.
Yeah. No, that's yeah. fair. That yeah. works.
But more interestingly, why didn't the salt monster just like ask for the salt?
That's true. I mean, so, just replicate the salt.
So yeah, this is this just point. A murderer.
Yeah. yeah. Just straight up murder. It's allowed on the Cerritos. Yeah. I also just think it's bullshit that Tendi ended up on the mission, to be honest.
Because yeah, that was surprising.
Ransom just accepts that it's Tendi and that he didn't know it was going to be Tendi and just assumes that's the cleaner. What happened to the actual cleaner? Why? Where did they right. end up? Why aren't they asking questions?
Yep. You know, because I know what I know about Tendi and her in the future, I thought mm-hmm. maybe she was brought along specifically to kick ass and they just knew that it was in there yeah. somewhere. But then when mm-hmm. the show says that she was meant to just beam them out, my question was then why is she down there at all? Why not just stay on the yeah. shuttle or the ship or whatever?
Yeah.
Because that's where you can beam from too. Or if you're O'Brien, that's you can exactly beam from right. pretty much anywhere.
You have beaming just embedded into your body. My last one was, I cannot believe that not one, not two, not three, not four new Romulan warbirds can't detect the cloak of an old Romulan warbird. I get maybe it can slip by the Federation, but even like the Federation knows how to see through that old cloaking technology to some degree. New Romulans should just have a button that says detect other cloaked ships because it's our technology. We should know how to be able to see through it. So yeah, it seemed a little bit hilarious, but ridiculous, and we would sin it as such. Yes, I'm a nerd. Anything else, Ambassador?
Nope.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us on that crazy ride through Lower Decks. Next week is episode 9, Crisis Point, which is, I cannot predict how you're going to like an episode, but it is a lot of people's favorite of the season.
Don't tell me that.
I'm going to reserve my opinion on the episode until next week, but it is a memorable one to say the least. So join us next week.
Does somebody die? That's my favorite.
Join us. Somebody gets eaten by a trash bag. And yes. It's not Tasha this time.
Oh.
What do you mean? Oh, we love Tasha. You don't know enough about Tasha yet, actually. We haven't seen enough Tasha episodes.
Hold on a second. I have an idea. We love Tasha.
Ouch. With that, we will see you next week. If you want to send us any emails or any hate mail specifically to Danae about Tasha Shade.
I have Tasha emotional attachment yeah. to her. Sorry.
That's fair. That's fair. Tasha Shade could be a distasteful explanation of her death as well. But yes, send us emails to CaptainSpod at cinemasins.com. Join our lovely Discord, discord.gg/cinemasins, and join our lovely crew of Trekkie people. And you can recommend episodes and stuff. And occasionally myself and the Ambassador are there and we'll pop in and say hello. Which she won't do it with an English accent, though I will.
Hello!
And until next week. Oh my goodness. It's rotate, 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 rotating all day from me.
Oh, it's an honor to be in the beam from me.
Live long and podspar.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sim brains, remind our show that...
Remind
our show. It's amazing.
Which is now a sentient thing. It's got a conscious of its own.
It really does, based on the live chat. Can I share a gift, Danae, with the chat that I've got that I showed you before we started the show on my buttons that I can press?
Do you want me to kill my beautiful music for a moment? Uh-huh. Okay, I'll fade it out.
This is a gift for everyone.
Okay.
Nope. I'm on the wrong... Wait. I have too many buttons. Wait, here we go. I've got it. Oh, yeah.
You have to turn that up. Crank it. All the way up. Yeah. Ian, you told me something early in our friendship, and I have to ask you if you were lying.
No. Go on.
You told me that your mom used to listen to Warp Core sounds while you were in the womb.
Oh no, that was a fib. That's what I predict. I imagine my dad would have done. I do. Wait, hang on a minute. Did I make that up, or did that actually happen? It's all redacted. Yeah, all of that information is redacted. No, I did watch Star Trek while I was in the womb, which means, and because TNG was my dad's favorite, it means that the warp core noise would have been in the background, and it does help me sleep at night. This is specifically the Enterprise D, of course. It's the engineering section.
It is very womb-esque.
Isn't it?
There are warp core sounds, 8-hour videos on YouTube. It is soothing.
Yeah, that's how I know I've got 8 hours of sleep. I start that one up. As soon as it finishes, it's just like, red alert, wake up!
That'd be really funny if somebody just inserted like a red alert right into the middle of it and didn't tell anybody. And so you think you're just going to be able to sleep at night, and all of a sudden it's like, whoop, whoop.
No,
this thing
that's
kicks
a
off.
War crime. That's the worst. That's the worst thing you could do to a person.
No, no.
I missed the red alert.
But I'll turn this music back on over the top of it. So we have like a nice little combo.
Is there too much? Is that okay?
I mean, I'm okay with listening to a heartbeat beat. I can feel my body attempting to match the rhythm. So I think that's healthy because it's nice and slow instead of like the that I'm on, you know.
Yeah. Nick made a valid point about... I did some research when I got to that Voyager episode, and I believe her parents were studying the Borg after the episode where Q introduced them. But I thought it had to be pre that episode, and I just put it down to the ship was destroyed. Starfleet didn't know what they were investigating. But then Slab also makes a valid point. I think Starfleet knew about the Borg before the Enterprise met them at J-25, but it's not something you tell all of the captains about because it's information overload. So yeah, my headcanon is that they knew that the Hansons interacted with some kind of creature, some kind of species, but didn't specifically know it was the Borg, and then put the pieces together after the fact. So I think it's pretty clear that that Picard did not know about the Borg. What year did the Hansons meet the Borg? And that's not the Umbop Hansons.
Who's the Hansons? Teach me.
The Hansons did Umbop.
No, I know. I'm talking about the ones you're talking about. I know.
So Seven of Nine's original name is Annika Hansen, and her parents were xenobiologists, and they were investigating the Borg. Their ship gets captured. They all get assimilated.
Oh.
Yeah. They took their fucking kid to investigate the Borg.
That's pretty dangerous.
So an AI overview says, in Star Trek Universe, the Hansons received approval from the Federation Council to study the Borg in 2353, 12 years before the Borg existence was known to them. So yeah, that's 12 years before the Enterprise is sent to meet the Borg.
They didn't know it was the Borg when they went.
Yeah, I think that's the insinuation. Although I'm pretty sure their research thing is like, we've called them the Borg, we want to go meet them. But also, they wouldn't know they were called the Borg, because the Borg called themselves the Borg.
What a thing to call yourself. You had nothing but options, and you went with Borg.
Yeah, an English word, cyborg.
Yeah. Great question from Slab. Why is a sex candle common knowledge among the lower deckers?
It's a good question. My headcanon for that is that the rumors go around the lower deckers on the Enterprise, and then when they go to a starbase, they'll talk about the stories, and then starbases become this circulation for gossip. So what I would see in there is how specific his knowledge is. Like, he may have heard a vague story that's been bastardized, but he got a lot of specifics about that story quite right.
Cameron said, oh, regarding 10 forward, Danae, I lived in a town that had a bar named 44 East. That was the name of the bar. It was also the address 44 East Avenue, so it is both.
If we ever open a bar, we're going to name it 10 forward regardless of where it is.
Just no matter, yeah.
Yeah.
We also will be sued by Star Trek.
We won't, because it's a location, not the name of a bar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. So it's both like my dream and my nightmare all together as one.
Which is exactly what a bar should be.
Here was a question during my Ask Me Anything moment that went totally awry. My favorite hair color that I've ever had.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Red.
Yes. But
yes.
It's because we had worked for, I think, a year at that point at making it a variegated red.
Mm-hmm.
So it was
ombre.
Not quite, like, it wasn't Fifth Element like that. It was like from purples into reds, and I really liked it. But my hair was shorter then, and I had the side of my head shaved as well. Actually, it was on this side. And so I could flip my hair over to the other side as it grew out awkwardly for a while. And it took a while for it to grow back. So, but that was one of my favorite colors because it was so fun, but it's so expensive to upkeep because it's like darker colors with a lighter hair. It's very tricky. So I watched a quick little short video of this lady and she was doing her hair and whoever was videoing her, I'm guessing significant other or something. I was like, could you tell everyone what you're doing? And she's like, I'm straightening my hair. I'm curling my hair. And he said, and what did you do before that? And she's like, I straightened it. He said, because before that, what was your hair? And she says, it's curly. So she has naturally curly hair that she straightened to then curl in a specific way. And she's just been doing it for hours to get it like this perfect way that she wants it.
Because if you explain it that way, of course, it sounds ridiculous. Yeah. But that it makes sense. You have to, make the egg to break it to make it again into something edible.
I one time did a faux hawk. And I had very long hair, and it took my friend was a hairstylist, and I went in and I said, I want to do something unique today. I want to have like a mohawk, but I don't want to actually shave the sides of my head, but I want to get some lift. So for a couple hours, she just pulled all my hair up, sprayed it, and then we had this sort of like thing. It looked like a Roman helmet. It was so cool.
Oh, yeah, with the bristles.
It was but it was quite long because it had long hair. And then I went to some people's house, and I didn't think about this ahead of time because I didn't care. I didn't give a fuck. But it was really funny because it was my first.
You didn't give a faux hawk.
It was, right? It was my first time to meet like a dozen people. They had never met me before, and they had no idea this wasn't my norm.
Yeah.
So I'm walking down the stairs into the basement, and my hair is hitting the ceiling of their basement. And they're just like, we had the most strange conversations. But it was a really interesting first impression.
I bet they respected
impression.
The heck out of you. I bet everybody wanted to talk to you and be your friend.
They all thought that I was a super cool person, I must say.
Uh-huh. It's confident.
When we were watching Picard, I was flipping out regularly about the clothing. And I would go to websites to try to find if somebody was selling the clothing. And regularly doing research on the website because so much sketch. Happens out there
so much. Yeah,
it is so tricky to find, like, you can't find official gear, and some of the sites they'll have like a beautiful jacket, but then you start digging around and you can't read the comments on the websites. You can't trust those. You have to go to like Better Business Bureau and reports and stuff, and it's so disappointing that so many were just like, I ordered this $400 jacket and I got this piece of shit, or I ordered this expensive jacket and I never heard from them again. And none of those reviews are on their sites, of course. And I wish they had official gear. Like, they do have a Star Trek shop, and that's fun to go
honestly,
look at.
Yeah, but honestly, the Star Trek shop, it's not great. It's really expensive, and it doesn't do, like, cosplay stuff like this.
No.
Like, it doesn't do uniforms. Like, they are missing out on this stuff.
You have to go to, like, Etsy, and then read up on somebody who knows how to make a great leather jacket on Etsy, and then you're paying, you know, an individual artist or an individual person who knows how to put those things together. But yeah, if I had money to blow,
No, we can just go in here because I know I can record everything to the board.
Oh yeah, I forget.
Yeah, I can. The board. You will become one with the board. That was a great Star Trek joke. It's amazing. Okay.